Don't you know me? I'm the new Berlin Wall, baby. Try and tear me down. I was born on the other side of a town ripped in two. I made it over the great divide. Now I'm coming for you. Enemies and adversaries, they try and tear me down. You want me, baby? I dare you. Try and tear me down.
Hello, welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And live in living color, Alex Pacella, our baby.
The band's back together, guys.
Oh, you're here. We're in a new apartment. It's the same table.
Yeah, it's the same table.
Mm-hmm. New room.
Same mics, too.
Same people.
Yeah.
Same cups. New cup. Inauguration cup.
Yes. The good one.
Yeah.
Yes, a good new cup. Today we're talking about Hedwig and the Angry Inch, as requested by our baby himself.
Very vehemently.
Yes, but before we begin, has baby met world?
Baby's met some world. So I took stock of how many songs I have in my musical now. Mm-hmm. One of them is yet to be written, and then one of them is going to be kind of this climactic battle that's made mostly of reprises, so that's not really done yet. But all told, I'm going to have 19 songs, probably, and 17 of them are, like, first draft done and fully arranged.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow. Are you prepared to kill 6 of them?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
good.
Yeah.
Any 6?
Russian roulette style? Well, funny you should bring that up. I talked to a friend of mine, has a friend who's a theater director, and it was just giving me advice about, like, what a director wants you to bring to them so they can decide if they're interested. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, like, you know, make sure you find someone that's going to tell you this shouldn't be here, this shouldn't be here, and that will challenge you. And I was like, oh, I bathe in pain. Like,
yeah.
I want to know first off if I should cut something. And I did have the thought this week. I was like, oh, it'd be fun if, like, when it's all done, if it all ever actually exists, if we did an episode on it, and then I'd realize I had to do a sing out Louise of one of my own songs, and it would be so meta that, yeah, I would become,
or would,
like,
we have to do it?
Oh my god.
Yeah, I think
okay,
that's truly how you,
oh, that's,
yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Is, or, there a love duet we can parody for you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Or I think you can still do it, but we write it.
I'd also be okay with that.
Yeah.
Oh, and you have to, like, read it live.
Yeah.
Sight unseen.
Yeah.
Sight unseen.
I'd be very okay with this.
Yeah.
Like a Mad Lib situation.
Uh-huh. And finally, for my world, so we're in a pandemic and we, yeah, can't hug anyone without weighing the pros and cons.
Yeah. It's a conversation. Every
it really is.
Do we hug? We had this conversation not 10 minutes ago.
We sure did. And luckily the answer was yes, so that, yeah, was nice. I've been having trouble sleeping because we're also desperately alone, and I was never great at sleeping anyway, and now it's been, like, really hard. Mm-hmm. So I thought, why don't I get a stuffed animal just so I can, like, hug something at night,
yeah,
and I'll help me sleep.
We both hug at night. Not each other. Other things.
Yeah.
Okay. Surrogate hugging things. And I got a teddy bear, and I named him Rannells after Andrew Rannells.
Oh, aww, that's cute.
Yeah.
Does he look like him? I don't know a teddy bear would, but...
No.
That was my first thought.
My original thought was, oh, wouldn't it be funny if I just named this teddy bear Andrew Rannells?
And, yeah, that's,
yeah,
great. That,
and then I was,
awesome,
like, well, Rannells is a really solid teddy bear name. So it became Rannells,
yeah,
for short.
Yeah, yeah, you called it for short, but we both know that the
his
bear's
name
is Andrew
Rannells.
His name is Andrew Rannells. Yes.
Andrew,
like,
Rannells,
if you checked
the bear.
His ID.
Yes. Yes.
It's Andrew Rannells.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all the world I met.
Kimberly, yeah, you've met world.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know what I'm about to talk about?
Oh, I know exactly what you're about to talk
about.
Tell
me.
I have had a whirlwind of a week. It began with Patreon content for Broadwasted.
Okay.
In which we watched the 2004 documentary Show Business, The Road to Broadway, which chronicles the 2003-2004 Broadway season, which included Taboo.
Mentioned in Andrew Rannells' book.
Yes. The 2003, Ewan Morton, George, Boy George, I almost said George Michael, that's incorrect.
Then Boy George Michael.
In the show. Boy George, Rosie O'Donnell vehicle, Taboo.
Taboo.
And I realized while watching this documentary that, you know, I had never watched taboo. I had never seen it. I was 15 when it, 14 when it came out. Alex had recently shared a bootleg with us of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and I went, I wonder if there's a taboo out there. And I put all of my biases about bootlegs behind me, and I watched Closing Night of Taboo. And then immediately, the next day, watched the London cast.
Okay.
And I had 2 days of all I thought about was Taboo. And the differences between the London production and the American production and what might have worked better or worse in either. What could have been done for it not to flop so epically hard as it did. And I've come to the conclusion that Taboo is due for a revival. It will, as some marriage between UK and Broadway, mostly the UK version, and I think it needs to come back. And I will give it $10 million of my own dollars because that has been proven to be the way you produce musicals. That is a joke. That's what Rosie O'Donnell did. It was a bad idea.
Yeah. And so I came home from work a couple nights in a row to Kimberly watching a bootleg of Taboo. And every time she was like, hop on in. Taboo, the water's fine.
The taboo's fine.
And I was like, hey, I've been at work all day. No, no. Like, like, look, you can finish this act, but you're changing this. Like, I can't.
What is it about?
Great question.
It's a Boy George.
This is not the Taboo episode. This is...
No, but I do kind of want to do an episode on Taboo because I feel like Alex will understand the need to watch both productions and really battle them against
each
other.
Is this a Boy George jukebox show?
No.
Okay.
It is an original score. Shut your mouth. It is an original score written by Boy George about his life, but fictionalized pretty heavily.
It's his In the Heights.
Kind of, except like his name is George in the show. Like, it's about him. And then at one point he's recording Do You Really Want to Hurt Me?
Oh, okay. So
and
it's a little
more
literal. And
they do Karma Chameleon.
Okay. So it's the story of...
It's the story
the
of
only
Boy
two
George.
Songs.
Yeah, it's the story of
and
Culture
then he wrote
Club.
New ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the story of Culture Club.
Yeah, okay.
And, like, the Taboo is a club from the 80s that, like, club kids, I think they're called, like, Blitz Kids in London, but they're all club kids here.
Okay.
But a very, like, artsy, weird, that whole crazy club scene of
go
the 80s.
Go do ecstasy and...
In, like, crazy costumes just for fun.
Yeah.
So it is about that world of London Taboo club scene through the, like... guise of George being there.
Mm-hmm.
In London, there's a protagonist that is not Boy George, and he is an outsider that comes into this world and is shown all the ways and, you know, gets
this
hurt
a,
along the way.
This is a chess situation.
And then on Broadway, that character is completely cut, and it's more about George. And also, Boy George is in the Broadway production. Not as himself.
Not as himself, as a different person.
As Lee Bowery.
This is the second time I've heard all this explained to me in the past week.
And you'll hear it more.
I'm getting more interested.
So
it's like chess with glitter.
Yeah, that like and like complete characters are cut from the show when it moves to Broadway. A character is added, but yet all of the songs remain the same. They're just reassigned to new people.
Okay.
Which I find fascinating, but also... So it's this weird thing, and my favorite thing to do when I see a new show that is not very good, that has potential, is I just think about it for a week, and I'm like, this is exactly how it could be better, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this. And it's very weird to be doing that about a show that is long closed.
Yes.
But there's no new shows to see, and so this is what I have right now.
Don't take Taboo from me.
Have it.
You'll take Taboo from my cold, glitter-soaked fingers.
You know, we really haven't had a Baby Met World on our side of the fence in quite a while, and now you really got one. If you really needed one, you really swung for the fences on that one.
Yeah, yesterday.
Is it a good show?
I think I'm in too deep.
Okay. You've serpicoed into Taboo, and you don't know what's real anymore.
Alex, I've only seen snippets. The answer is no.
Okay.
The answer is no.
Okay. I listened to one track in the background, and I wasn't paying attention, but I also wasn't, like, super impressed.
The main thing I will say, and this is what made me watch it, is that Ewan Morton had a he's still great. He actually was Hedwig on the national tour.
Oh.
And so that was also part of why I wanted to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
gorgeous voice. He did great. He was nominated for a Tony Award for this show. But also, this show didn't run very long, and so he moved to the U.S., thought he was going to become a star. His show closed. His visa ran out. He had to go back to Scotland.
Oh.
And I remember watching this in, like, 2007 and being like, I'm extremely sad, but there's nothing I can do about it. And, like, now I've kind of weirdly followed his career because I've always felt so bad about Taboo.
Okay.
A show that I had never actually seen or listened to. And so I have remedied that, and there, that's all.
Yeah. Okay.
And maybe one day I'll do an episode about Taboo, but it'll mostly be me explaining the differences.
Yeah.
We'll do a mini-sode on it that's just you and me, and you can just...
Yeah. And I will say, the bootleg I watched was
me
hard.
Playing video games in the corner.
And me and Alex being like, well, did you notice
this? And I'll be like, what did we just watch? And Jay's like, Tetris? That's what I'm watching right now.
Yeah.
So that is how I decided that bootlegs are given a pass for the next couple of months while we weather this storm.
Okay.
And then I watched two Hedwigs today. So there we go.
Yay.
It was fun. Do you want a word of the week?
Word of the week?
Word of the week?
Word of the week is brought to you today by a dear coworker of mine who said this term to her boyfriend who is not in theater at all. And then he really needed an explanation of what it was, and he found it hilarious. And so I present to you, Alex, the park and bark.
You said it in our Phantom episode, and I kind of figured out what it meant just from context.
Great.
A staggering amount of Hedwig and the Angry Inch is parking and barking.
Oh, yeah. Now,
and that is what a park and bark is. It is a song where you park yourself somewhere and then you just belt out that song.
Okay.
Generally, it means there's not a lot of acting beats or other things going on. You just park it and bark it.
It's a moment in the show in which it's like an aria in an opera. It's like they're not trying to...
It's a listen to me sing.
It is a listen to me sing yes. moment. They're not trying to use the song to really like move anything plot-wise or set-wise. It's like when it's either, it's, you know, I think like, what would you think is the most iconic?
Rose's turn.
Oh, see, I think it's Dreamgirls.
And I'm telling you.
And I'm telling you.
Oh, because she very much parks herself right there. She tells
you. Yeah. The whole point is that she's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's parked.
And barking.
Absolutely. Ella. You know, and it's one of those terms where, like, it can be used in the derogatory, and it can also be used in, like, a park and bark, and, like, it was amazing. Like, you didn't need her to do anything else. Gotcha. Like, I'm here in Color Purple gets a standing ovation afterwards, and that is a park and bark.
And it is a slang term that has almost become industry, like professional terminology. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like, cool, I come here, I park and bark, and then what? Where am I moving? Okay, great, over here, awesome. But like, this is where...
Even just like while you're blocking something, like, and this song's just pretty much a park and bark, so do whatever you want, and then we move on.
Yeah.
I'm guessing there's a lot of overlap between park and bark and 11 o'clock numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
They're usually one and the same.
Yeah. Like, she used to be mine. She's just standing there having a breakdown, but that's the whole point, is the lack of motion. Yeah. Literally, like, it's thematically relevant.
Oh, I never really made the connection until we just started talking about it. Yeah, they're basically like they're arias from operas.
Oh.
They're just,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you have too many of those in a show, and everyone has their turn to park and bark. Usually you need one person gets to do it a show. And then sometimes... Yeah. It's like, usually if there's a show with too many ballads, but it's like, I don't know, they just kept standing and singing, and then standing and singing.
Yeah.
I think I wrote a park and bark in my show, the villain song. He's just supposed to sort of standing there just telling you his history.
Yeah there's
that. At least that's one way that you could stage it.
Yeah. Like, the ladies improving from the prom, park and bark.
Except in the movie when they made people dance.
They made people dance. And I was like, yo, I just want to hear her, like... Like, Beth Lovell literally would just, like, just bring the house down every night.
Yeah. Enter from the door, and she stood still. Oh, what a good show.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other...
Like, iconic
ones. Wait for it? A little bit. Because the whole point is he's not moving.
I don't think there's really...
I don't know that there is a park and bark in Hamilton.
Because
that's also not a big belty song.
No, you know what the park and bark in Hamilton is?
Quiet Uptown?
It's Satisfied. She doesn't. She doesn't sing it, but she gets up, like she takes center stage.
Yeah.
And just
kills it.
The whole thing is moving. The revolving stage.
Yeah, everything's moving around her, and she's just telling you what's what.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But she's like rapping, so it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's like.
But she's rapping, so it's different.
You know when somebody raps it, it's just different.
In case you've never seen a picture of my husband.
How'd you like Hamilton? Oh, I was rapping. It was different. I liked it.
I want that on the poster
Hamilton, it's rapping.
It's rapping. It's different.
Oh, man.
Jay Schmidt,
a preview called it different and rapping.
Different and rapping.
I missed you guys so much.
I don't know if you can tell.
A little bit.
Goodness. Anyway, we love him, Park and Bark, and now you can use that term freely and willingly.
Okay.
I'm going to try and think of some other, like, random terms like that.
Yeah. Well, because that's... Those are the kind of like, those are kind of like the,
like when we said it, forgetting that it was an inside Broadway term, and you were like, I kind of figured it out by the context. Because I'm like, I just should have explained it.
Yeah, we're gonna start getting into like some like things that'll like make you like cool.
Okay. To say. I felt cool like knowing what equity cot meant. I feel like another one that's like, this was
because
like, this was the backstage, and then it kind of became this is a thing we actually say.
Well, yeah, if you're like ever backstage, like you now know to make like an equity cot joke reference.
I do.
Be like, oh, where's the equity cot?
And with my luck, no one will understand it.
Yeah.
It's a flex that basically says, yeah, I've had a job.
Yeah.
I've done this professionally.
Got a little bit of green in my brow line, so you think I might be Elphaba? And it freaks everybody in the room out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shall we get into?
I think we should.
Hedwig and the Angry Inch. This was recommended by Alex, and I don't think he realized that neither Jay nor I had really
any history with it.
Any history with the show. I had an unlocked memory of my history with the show because I knew I'd seen the movie and I forgot why. And it's because my senior year, my voice teacher gave me Wig in a Box to sing.
Oh, okay.
So he's like, you should do something more contemporary. How about Wig in a Box? I'm like, that's not for me to sing.
Hmm. Yeah.
And he was like, no, women have played Hedwig, you can do it. And I was like, okay.
How'd you do with it?
Fine, but it was never, I'm trying to remember if it like didn't make it into my book, and I definitely didn't sing it at a jury. So
that's 100% not like that kind
of. I feel like it was more of like, this will sound good in your voice and we can use this in lessons to learn about this style of singing. That's and awesome. Then you don't need to sing this.
Yeah.
But because of that song, I went and watched the movie. But that's really my only history with the show. I remember thinking about seeing it on Broadway, but it was always sold out.
Yeah, it was sold really well.
And it was at the beginning. It was before Broadway sort of was getting tickets to things. So I didn't see it.
I had no history with the show.
And I have not listened to any of the music since I watched the movie in 2011, probably my senior year of college.
Okay.
And that's all. But Alex, how did you come to know of this?
So
and
I
have you been in a taboo like rage watching all of the
I'm not going to say no because I'm going to say yes. I had a friend who liked this movie in college,
mm-hmm.
and told me what it was about, and I didn't end up watching it, but I just always knew it existed. And then in 2014, I started to see the posters everywhere on the subway.
Yeah.
And It's one of those shows that, like, and I love when a show can do this, just the image of something from the show is iconic in and of itself, even if you don't know exactly why yet.
Yeah.
The hair.
The hair, especially the eye makeup and the glitter with the blue. Is
totally.
Very, yeah. So, like, I gathered from looking at the poster of Darren Criss with the stuff on, I was like, oh, this show's probably cool. I don't know anything about it. I didn't know it was a glam rock show. I didn't know... I assumed it was the story of a band with a genderqueer singer trying to make it. I thought it was a narrative show.
Hmm.
Then about 2 months ago, I just said, oh, I should listen to that because we could do an episode on it. And I just fell in love with it from like the first three notes onward. Listened to the whole album in one day. Loved it. Watched the movie. I think the movie's fine. I'm impressed at how it adapted itself, but I don't think it's my favorite form of that. Because it's weirdly for a movie that is Hedwig and the Angry Inch, it uses a lot of visual clues that aren't quite clear, so it is a little too subtle for its own good, the movie, in a way that you wouldn't think a Hedwig movie would be. And it kind of, like, if you know the show and then you see it, you go, oh, that's what that means. but I hadn't. I just watched the movie thinking it was the narrative and going, I was like, okay,
what's happening?
Yeah, I was like, okay, the husband's standing in the doorway and now he's gone. But in the show, this is my husband left me, and you know, you actually know what everything means.
Yeah.
So I like the movie, but not as much as I liked when I watched the bootleg. And I watched every Hedwig that I could find. I watched Andrew Rannells first. I listened to the album with Neil Patrick Harris. I watched the Michael C. Hall bootleg. I wanted to find Taye Diggs because I really want to see a black perspective on Hedwig. That'd be really cool. And then I've just been like evangelical about how much I like the show to other people because it scratches. It is A, rocketed up to the top of at least my top five shows, like almost instantly. Because this is very much up my musical alley. Like glam rock, punk rock, bordering on that kind of 90s, like Nirvana-ish sort of sound. It's very much, and also how much it has clearly done its homework about that sound. Like a thing that I love is that Hedwig is always referencing mythology and literature and stuff. And those like Bowie and Lou Reed, they were basically poetry nerds that loved to do coke and have orgies and play guitar.
Yep.
So they really modeled Hedwig on that archetype. And I was like, oh, you guys know this genre in a way that doesn't feel like you're a tourist in it.
I'm
impressed by that.
My big walk away from it, listening through, I was like, these are good rock songs. I was like, this may be my favorite. Yeah, like from the first song, I was like, this is the only rock musical I've heard in a while that is actually rock songs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, looking in the history of it, instead of a traditional workshop for this show, they just kept booking gigs as Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Yeah, and they workshopped it in clubs.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Huh. That explains a lot.
Yeah, so that you got the feedback of rock audiences first.
Yeah, who don't realize that what's going on exactly.
Instead of, like, workshopping a rock musical for a bunch of Broadway people that are like, that sounds like rock music, yeah.
It's really interesting, though, like, the funny thing about rock club audiences is that, like, my first thought when you said that, I was like, oh, maybe that was, like, that's brave. And I'm like, no, like, weirdly, rock crowds will go with you.
Yeah.
Like, if you come out and if you make a big, daring choice, they'll follow you. Like, they're actually, like,
They're down to clown.
Yeah, they're down to clown.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, maybe that is, ooh, man, to go back and watch that.
Yeah, oh, I know.
I'm sure there's an off-Broadway bootleg. I haven't watched it yet, but there must be.
There is. I watched some highlights from it today.
It's behind six versions of Taboo in your YouTube queue.
and previewed watching Cobra Kai. All my YouTube.
Now you gotta have previewed watch Taboo.
No, no. That would be sorry. It's literally for one person.
Me.
Uh-huh.
And Linda. What about like a Valentine's Day episode where I show you things and you have to react to it?
That's our whole life.
Yeah, it is.
I will say this.
Yeah.
I listened through today and I did like read all the synopsises. Like I got like hip to like what it's about, but I only listened to it. And I think my like recommendation to people listening is that find a bootleg of this. Okay. In that, like, I don't think listening through is sufficient to getting the vibe of this show.
I agree.
Yeah, because it's a concert.
Yeah, all the songs are diegetic.
Yeah, so if you listen to the album, it's just like, oh, this is a good album.
Yeah.
But you don't get the story, really.
Yeah.
Because you need the patter.
Because we've done shows, Natasha, the whole time I was like, man, I wish I was watching this. And this was like, oh, I feel like me not watching this is like, I'm not getting it. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm not really like getting the actual experience of this show.
Yeah, because the songs don't so much in the kind of musical way that we're used to move the story. They do because the song being played and is part of the plot, basically.
Yeah.
But like, you don't hear a plot point on a song. You hear a song that in context is a plot point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, because I specifically when I got on the album to the Hurt Locker the Musical bit.
Without context is, I'm sure, strange.
I looked it up. I was like looking through it. I was like, why is there a Hurt Locker the Musical? What is this even? And then they explained like the whole bit.
Yeah, it's a great Wikipedia, bit.
And I was like, yo, this show's funny. Uh-huh. I was like, yo, okay. Yeah. It blew it wide open for me. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. This is something else.
The jokes are quite good. And what I do love, and I mentioned this when we were off mic, it's so deftly written that some of Hedwig's jokes do not land. This show, in the fiction, is a little weird and uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah.
And also, John Cameron Mitchell is a great joke writer because one of my favorite parts of the movie is there's a running joke about all the clubs Hedwig is playing is called Bilgewater's. It's like a Red Lobster kind of place.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also, that's funny, and then there's Yitzhak is going to leave the group to play Angel in a Guam production of Rent. I just think that's hilarious.
Yeah, that was a joke in the movie.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that must be really from the show. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not. It's just for the movie.
Yeah.
Good bit, though.
They must rewrite the jokes all the time. Because
I'm sure.
I watched Neil Patrick Harris and John Cameron Mitchell, and even like some of the beats are played differently.
Yeah, and John Cameron Mitchell is also very kind of good at crowd work, so sometimes his will be a little more riffing and like yell something out, and then he's almost like a comic. Like, he's really, really funny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Watching this today made me realize a genre of musicals that I really do enjoy is a fake concert.
Me too. I didn't realize it was an evening with Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and that's the perfect way to do the show.
Yeah.
And I wish they would remake the movie as like an Irving Plaza, like little rock club,
oh,
just concert
absolutely.
Film.
Absolutely.
I'd watch that in a second.
Yeah. I also like, I was like, oh, I really like the vibe of the show that it's like a fake concert. And I was like, oh, it reminds me of, and I was like, oh, because that's also a fake concert.
Yeah.
What
are some other ones?
Altar Boys.
Heard of it.
Yeah.
Which is a Christian boy band.
Okay.
And the plot is that, are they breaking up or
something
someone's
like
going
like
off on a solo career?
Or,
yeah.
It's something.
Six.
Yeah.
Yes.
Six.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The Wildness. Our favorite show.
The Wildness.
Is there a cast album? Like, how do we do an episode about The Wildness?
I
don't think we can. And
truly,
I think that's the point of the show.
That's what's so special about The Wildness is that, like, I think it's just.
Yeah.
We just can't
But
really...
I love, like, the vibe of a concert that then has a storyline.
Me too.
For instance, in The Wildness, one of the performers is not there, and so his sister is filling in.
Yeah.
But the whole night is about, like, well, I wonder where he is.
Yeah, and the show's in, and that makes the show in real time, so if something happens, it feels, like,
yep.
extra grave,
yep.
and that's a really cool, like, tense feeling, but, like, a rewardingly tense feeling.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's a good point. That is like happening in real time.
Yeah. Like you can't stop it because there's no cuts, as it were. It's like,
yeah.
uh-oh.
And you know that they just have to keep going because it's a concert. Like,
yeah.
you know that nothing's going to stop.
It's a big face.
It like adds to the stakes.
Exactly.
In such a real way.
Exactly.
Wow.
It also, the thing is that like this show like is pretty heavy. But making it, like, giving it, like, the framing device of the concert, like, actually kind of makes it a little bit more approachable for people.
Yeah.
Because I think
then
that's...
Then if this is just a one-man
that's what,
show.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
what always, like, kept me away from Hedwig, is I was like, yo, that's... Like, every time they describe it, I'm like, that seems pretty heavy. And then it's like, nah, but they're, like, the lead singer of a band, and it's kind of cool. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because it's all in the past, there's almost a perspective, like, on some level, I have processed this.
Yeah.
So it feels a little bit less than like if you were watching it play out in real time like the movie, it's almost like, oh, this is
just
okay.
Just like watching his story, yeah.
The
yeah.
main drive is them playing the show. It's not
yes.
about what, like the circumstances of the characters is more, it's flavor rather than the meal. It's like the
yeah.
spices to it.
And Hedwig yeah. is describing events of the past and not living them in real time until
yeah.
the end.
And what's so cool is kind that of. Those... The process of bringing those up does affect the plot of the show because Hedwig comes unglued. Literally, the character of Hedwig that Hedwig
yeah.
has been basically building as a defense mechanism just literally unravels.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so cool. I'll get to it in a little love why I love that. But yeah.
I have a question about
yes.
a previous episode.
Okay.
Do you think that you watching Hedwig and the Angry Inch multiple times and getting really into the storytelling of this concert affected your thoughts on Man in Chair?
How exactly?
Because Hedwig is so intertwined with the plot and like playing a song, but then like has more depth. And
okay.
I was like, is that why you wanted more out of Man in Chair?
I want that because I, well, the reason I wanted more of that was because when I was watching Drowsy, those were the moments that resonated with me. And that's kind of how I understand a character being a framing device best. Mm-hmm. But now that you mention it, that's probably not spurred by Hedwig, but clearly I like when that happens, and that's why I'm drawn to Hedwig.
Yeah, that was sort of, yeah. A dual question.
Yeah, so not necessarily causality, but correlation indeed.
And it's the example of what you wanted Manachair to be.
Yeah, I kind of want Manachair to be a little more like a Hedwig kind of.
Yeah.
Which would be a very interesting mashup.
I'm just picturing Hedwig and Chair Mitchell as Hedwig in the chair of Drowsy Chaperone.
Or Man in Angry Inch. No, Hedwig and Chair is better.
Or just do a revival of Hedwig where the man and Chair is sitting on the corner like, we're going to listen to my favorite show, Hedwig and the Angry
Inch. Oh, do you know how fast I would buy the first ticket to that show?
That is just crazy enough to work.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Because Man and Chair would love Hedwig.
Because we don't, we can assume that because Man and Chair loves theater, he's probably got, if he hasn't seen it, that he has a bigger taste than just screwball comedies from the 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would see a Man and Chair do, like, a Superstar type of show. You could do so many different shows. That's why you're saying it's right for a sequel, because all you gotta do is change the show.
He clearly has a record collection.
Yeah!
Yeah, if they did a Man and Chair sequel for, like, a Andrew Lloyd Webber-esque Phantom of the Opera kind of show.
Holy shit, I would love that.
Oh, because then you get to parody that at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh.
We've created a new genre. It's called the Man in Chairs Record Collection.
Yeah.
It should happen every Saturday night.
Keep going. You know, like, why not? We could make a bunch of them.
All right, back to Hedwig. Now that we've daydreamed our lives into a new theater, because we're all starved for new work.
So starved. That's why I had to make my own one.
Yes, exactly.
I had to build a musical from scratch because I'm so thirsty.
But that's why, like, I'm like fine with bootlegs. And I'm like, well, I did never see Hedwig, so this is the only way I'll ever get to see it at this point.
And I think that's a show, like I said, do it as a concert film, because if there's a market for it, it's probably so cheap to make. It's just you probably get the old bit. You just make it the same people. Yeah. Get Stephen Trask, and if you can get John Cameron Mitchell, great. But like, it's just you shoot it like a concert movie, and it's already meant to be for a small room.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of overhead to fill budget-wise.
No.
You could make this in a weekend if you wanted to.
Yeah. You could do it on a video budget.
Yeah, and if anything, that might add to the charm of it. Like, that's all the band could afford to make their concert movie or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, people! I want it!
Yes, do it.
Yeah. Shoot it on videotape?
Yes! Like, it's a little frayed around the edges. Like, it's an old tape.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Yitzhak?
Yes.
And Lena Hall. She won a Tony for this performance.
Mm-hmm.
Deservedly so. I had never, because I don't know Hedwig at all, really, I'd always been like, oh, that's probably hard to sing because it's so low. And then I watched this and I was like, oh, no, she's singing like herself.
Yep.
Pretty much the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great.
Yeah.
I love Lena Hall. Her name is Selena Carvajal when she appeared in Legally Blonde, The Search for the Next Elle Woods.
Oh, is that where she got her start?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh. So and Lena then she Hall was in Toxic Stadium? Avenger off-Broadway.
I saw her in that. She was very good.
She was very good. But this was sort of her big break. Mm-hmm. And then she played Hedwig on tour.
Nice.
She went out on tour and she did Hedwig on matinees.
Okay. I've watched the Tony performance of Hedwig so many times.
It was fun.
It's fun.
That was a good year.
Yeah.
What won? Oh, Gentleman's Guide.
Okay.
But Neil Patrick Harris and Lena Hall won.
Here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Does Hedwig border on the concept of just being a play with music as opposed to a musical?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. 100%. So it feels blurry to me. I don't care ultimately, but I'm always like, should I be bringing this up for a musical podcast? Because
it's still
valid, but it feels a little...
No.
Well, I will say that Oscar Hammerstein always described his plays as a musical play.
Okay.
It was never like music, but also because they were coming out of the guise of musical comedy, which is a kind of a completely different thing.
Yeah. It's my main question is like, how many diegetic songs until your show is a play that happens to be about musicians? And I'm sure it's a much grayer boundary than one could actually define, but like,
especially
it feels like it's close to that edge.
This show, there are times where although obviously they all know what songs they're singing because there's a set list to their act,
mm-hmm.
there are moments where they're also acting plot points out in those moments. Like,
yeah.
when Yitzhak takes over to sing, when things, like,
Tommy-nosis.
Unexpectedly happen, Tommy-nosis. Like, it's not just mute. Like, the plot is unfolding while they are singing, whether the songs are diegetic or not.
Yes.
I mean, I will say this, Alex. I'm actually impressed that you bring up that point, because that was exactly what me and Kimberly were talking about before you got here today. Because I was like, I feel like the music's really not that important to this show. Like, I feel like the meat of this is the book, which is not what I expected at all. Like, I expected, like the musics are, there's some bops in this, and that there's some good music, but I was like, oh, I expected, like, that to be... Hedwig, like, exists in that, like, cult classic realm.
Yes.
Similar to, like, it
like gives... Rocky Horror.
Gives
situation.
A Rocky Horror kind of vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, like, but that also, it existing in that plane comes with, like, a certain level of, like, expectation from people who don't even know what it is.
Yeah, like I told you, I knew about it for years and had all these assumptions about it.
Yeah.
And I saw it and it was completely different.
It's very different. And I told you all day that I've been kicking myself that I didn't make myself go see it.
Yeah, I'm bummed I didn't see it too.
Yeah, because I think...
Because I think...
In the same guys, I don't think we knew he was funny. Like, I don't think we knew it was funny.
I didn't know it was
funny. I think if I saw this show in my I hate musicals period, I think I still would have liked it.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Because it is mostly a concert. Your before you liked musicals
yes.
brain would have been like, this is mostly a concert. It's
yeah.
just scripted concert.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Hedwig.
Me too.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't think...
Thank you for this.
You're welcome.
it was very fun to discover something new.
Can I, I was going to save this for Little Loves, but we already kind of touched on it, given
yeah.
the structure.
And then we can go into Little Loves
yes.
after.
So my big love of the show, and this is going to be a little involved, but I think it's really cool. So we can like infer from the fiction that this set list is a show they have done hundreds of times.
Yes.
And the show's supposed to go, you know, Tear Me Down, Monologue, Origin of Love, blah, 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 Midnight Radio, Good Night, Everybody. It's supposed to happen like that. But what happens is Hedwig unravels and their marriage starts to spin out of control with each song, and to the end where Hedwig, the persona, literally comes apart. So there is a version of this show in the fiction that goes completely without hitch, but
yeah.
we never see it because it's not the one that matters. We are seeing the last Hedwig in the Angry Inch show, but we can infer that hundreds of other ones that didn't end with all the shit being stripped off happened. And I think that's so, so cool.
That's the like basis of theater, is why are you choosing today?
Exactly.
Because something different happened.
Yeah.
That's why there's a play about it.
Yeah, so that every song now takes on a new meaning based on what has just happened in the ungluing process of this character.
Yep.
And I think that's like... ninja level writing. I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You're welcome, guys.
Let's talk about Little Loves.
Okay. Tear Me Down. For me, it's my favorite show in the favorite song in the whole show. It was the one that I said, two notes in, I was hooked. I never stopped singing it to the point I'm almost a little sick of it because it's just been in my brain for hours and hours on a loop.
Me and Stranger in This World.
Yes. Yes. Origin of Love, two points in that are my little loves. One is the melody, and then Fire with the big shot down. That's really cool. And then the joke right before it. Here's a bedtime story my mother whispered to me in the dark and then later retracted. Ah, so good. And then what else did I have? The fact that I mentioned this a little bit before, but the fact that they made Hedwig really smart and like well-read and like self-educated, because that's very much what those glam rock archetypes were like. Because Bowie, like, people were like, what do you love to do when you're not being Bowie? He was like, I read all the time. Like, and that's kind of what they were very thinky kind of rock stars.
Yeah.
And then finally, Midnight Radio. Great song. It's a great way to end that show. And then it ends with Hedwig not singing the final notes. They just kind of wander off, and it's also an apology to Yitzhak for being an abusive partner. Because
you could make
a compelling argument that Hedwig isn't a great person.
Oh, why, yes, you could.
Yes, yes.
My main little love is all of the jokes referring to the stillness of someone's face.
Yeah.
And it could have been a photograph. Her face was so still. and it could have been my mother. Her face was so still. And it could have, like, it just, like, every time they bring it up, it's just like an at, I don't know.
Yeah.
I love a callback. I love building on a joke. I love when jokes come in threes. Mm-hmm. That was wonderful. I loved the set in Wig in a Box when all of the wigs came down and then they bopped their heads.
There was a surprising amount of production value in that Broadway one at specific points where it's like, oh, that looks expensive.
I think they must have had a good budget.
Yeah.
And then the designers were like, cool, so we don't need a lot, so can, where should we put it?
Let's make Hurt Locker the musical that doesn't exist.
Yo, oh my God. That's my, so funny. That's my little love, because it's such a good song.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, yo, this is a song that would be in Hurt Locker the musical.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And you can also picture Lena Hall being the, what's her face, Jessica Chastain part,
yes,
in Hurt Locker the musical, mm-hmm, in a second.
So good.
Oh, so Michael C. Hall is the Jeremy Renner?
Yeah.
Yeah, because how do you, justify them
being, oh, I want that now.
Because they had to justify them being in a Broadway house.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, like, level of
thought.
Well, they,
world building.
Yeah, they just, like, give a shit about what this show is, and they're like, mm-hmm, well, we're not just going to put a rock show in a Broadway house and not talk about it.
And you also, it made it easier to feel like a real concert when you weren't imagining you were somewhere else.
Yeah,
as an audience member,
they
in your mind,
in the
you're
room.
In the Belasco.
Yeah,
and you are actually in the Belasco. You're not going there, and they're like, "This is the world tour, and we're in Toledo, oh, and like this
yeah.
is a great, this is a almost a graveyard. I meant parking lot. This is a
yeah.
parking lot in Toledo. Like,
you are exactly where you're.
You are exactly you are. Where you're yep. supposed to be, and exactly where you are just seeing something fictionalized.
Yeah. Also, that car.
I think also
is used as a quick change like pod, and I think that's pretty cool.
I just want to point out, this is a little love, of course. I blink my eyes for 2 seconds, and there's a new wig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I looked yeah. away, I looked back, and I was like, "There's a new wig. That's a new outfit. When did this happen? What am I not looking? Why am I not
yeah.
paying attention?"
You know what's what? I'm just realizing this.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff in this show is a little bit overblown and a little bit, like, you know, glam rock, a little cartoony. But them making sure...
To ground it
in where it is. And it's like, you are in a Broadway house seeing this rock show. Or, like, wherever you are, them being specifically like, no, you're here watching this. You are here watching these people up here. Like, it really, like, solidifies that it's not... a bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
because
it humanizes
stakes,
it.
Like we were talking about before.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm looking at this person describing their life to me.
Because I was like, yeah, it's a good bit, but like, why would you go to that length to make sure? And then I was like, no, it's actually really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, like, from the word go, you only have to buy in to very few given circumstances.
Yeah.
You're not sitting in a show and they're like, this is 1800s Paris beneath an opera house.
Yeah, for real.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you have a character that is, it's a concert. They're breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
You can't have the audience playing a character in a different place. Like, don't give the audience like a character arc.
Yeah.
Let them be where they are so that they can just enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also makes me wish I saw the show on tour and like how it changed when they were at the Academy of Music or when they were
yeah they played that in the Academy of Music.
I actually think they did it in the forest.
Okay. In the forest?
In the forest.
What about all the trees?
In the forest theater.
I know.
I think my mom saw it. Must have been on her.
How does your mom feel about Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
I think she saw Ewan Morton and just was so in love with him because my mother is who made me want to watch Taboo. Because she has always heard that song, Stranger in This World, on Broadway radio and gone, he just has such a beautiful voice. And mm-hmm. she loved that documentary.
Okay. Yeah. My mom knew about the show. I was surprised. I think just because she was a Dexter fan and that was kind of whatever he was doing was
yeah.
in her orbit. But I was like, oh, we're doing the show Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And she's like, oh, yeah, I know that show.
But I also feel like it must have been part of the zeitgeist in, like, 98 when it was out. Because I remember, like, my dad making references to it. Like, it was part of pop culture. It was a hit in the 90s.
Yeah.
It ran
and
for, like,
movie,
2 years.
And yet the movie bombed, which is interesting. But
yeah, because it was a weird movie.
It's, I just...
Yeah. Not the best version.
They should have done it at Irving Plaza and just filmed it.
Yeah.
A Le Poisson Rouge, perhaps?
I also just would wonder, I wonder how this show tours, because, like, this is a niche product.
Yeah.
Like, it did very well in New York, but, like, I can't imagine this really just killing it in Cleveland. I just really can't.
I wonder. Yeah, I feel like it probably has, I mean, we know people who've seen it millions of times.
Yeah.
So every time you brought it up. It must have such a following.
Every time you would bring up the tour, I was like, they toured this show.
As if the band is touring. You're not giving
the middle of America enough credit.
I mean,
there are probably people there that need to see this show, or that, like, have. I feel like, I don't know. People aren't escaping to the big city anymore.
I guess.
Or their big city is Cleveland. Who knows?
Also, Neil Patrick Harris will interest, even if they don't see him as Hedwig, just knowing he's involved will be a draw.
Yeah, that's true.
Of just like.
Because the Hedwigs they got for Broadway were like stars.
Stars.
They were like, if they weren't good, they would have been stunt casts.
But they were all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because you can't stunt cast a show.
No. Like, you cannot.
If they're not
good from the minute they step on stage, everyone leaves.
If they're not incredible, the show bombs.
Yeah.
Which is the pressure.
Yeah. True. I'm sure, like, that's why some people only did like week long runs. I think
Really?
I think a few were pretty short.
Huh.
Hmm. I feel like Michael C. Hall kept extending, but.
Well, you know why he was Hedwig, right?
Huh? He begged.
He approached producers.
Yeah.
That's incredible to me.
Mm-hmm.
Who did close? I thought it was Darren Criss.
I think it was Darren Criss.
He was the one I probably saw the most posters of, so they were probably trying to push.
I also think that's interesting because he's younger. Like, he's closer to the age that John Cameron Mitchell was when he did it in the 90s, which I also kind of loved that they skewed older in this revival, because it's still taking place in real time.
Yeah.
So that you can still say I was in my mid to, what does he say? My early, late 20s in the 80s.
Because this show...
It was true when John Cameron Mitchell was in his 30s in the 90s. Yeah. And then... Now,
in some ways, this is a period piece because the Cold War is a big part of the mythos. So, it's someone talking to you now, but, like, it's, you know, the specter of the Berlin Wall is an important factor in who Hedwig even is.
Yeah, absolutely,
totally.
So, you know, the further we get from that, is things get a little tougher to gel.
Absolutely. Any other loves?
I think we're good.
I think that's it. I just love this whole show, and I'm so glad I found it eventually.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, sorry, this was... you had to find this on your own, pal. This is...
I know. Bring us more. We've sent you out into the wild to collect new shows.
You're a Broadway teenager now. You're like finding your own... You're finding your own material. Like, I don't know if I approve of this show. I don't know if I approve.
He's making his own one now? We'll see.
Oh, what is Harold doing? What's that racket in the basement?
Since you made me, now I've made you. What is this? It's a lyric from my show. Anyway, Harold should leave, but also maybe he sticks around long enough that Hedwig does the sugar daddy wipe those Christmas lights on his face. That is just a beautiful part of that show.
I think, I kind of want Harold to answer his phone because...
Hedwig would make him do it.
Yeah, Hedwig would make him do it, and I feel
who's
like...
Who's calling?
The crowd. The crowd.
Put it in the microphone. It's all here. Why you bothered me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Be so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I weirdly think Harold's really into this show. And I didn't think he knew he was gonna be until he was like, oh, I kinda like this.
And he's like, oh yeah, this is the music I grew up with, and like, she looks pretty.
There's a story about I was watching Andrew Rannells give an interview, and he said to his mom, I'm gonna play Hedwig. And she goes, you're playing a girl? He goes, yeah, are you going to be a pretty girl? He goes, no.
No.
No, that's not the point.
No. That wig kind of looks like a football helmet on most people, except for John Cameron Mitchell, if you ask me. I don't know why. It looks fine on him. Other people are like, ooh.
Well, it was modeled on his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first wig, apparently, in like the early 90s when they were workshopping it, was a like gross synthetic wig, and they just put toilet paper rolls underneath and just rolled it up.
And they would often unspool.
That's hilarious.
There is a video on YouTube that I remember watching when the show was on of the wig designer.
Okay.
Talking about all of the different wigs and like when they change and how he takes care of them. And that they are all, which I found very interesting, we've talked about wigs on this show before, mm-hmm. they are all hard fronts, not lace fronts.
Okay, because, that's, because they're supposed to look kind of bad.
Affordable.
Yeah.
And so they're purposefully all hard front wigs.
Yeah.
Because like they are meant to look like a wig, where most wigs on Broadway are meant to look like your hair.
Yeah. This is a show where you're supposed to see the seams because they're starting to come undone a bit. Exactly. And if you didn't, it would feel weird and polished.
Yeah. So they're diegetic wigs is what you're saying.
They're diegetic wigs.
And that's my new improv team name. We're diegetic wigs. We just didn't want our suggestion to get started.
We need a suggestion. The Berlin Wall.
Well, do I have a show for you? Oh my goodness, what a good show. Sing out Louise. Unless there's a review.
There's a review.
We got lost in it.
For Love a false least. Start.
We sure did.
Here we go.
We sure did. This is the seams. All right. This is from Trout D. Love this show. Such a great podcast. Love the deep dives, the humor, and the insight. I feel like we're all sitting around chatting about shows, and so will you. Please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars and a nice review on iTunes. It really helps our numbers.
Thank you so much. Yes. And now, sing out Louise.
Listeners, whether you like it or not, Alex!
Don't you know me? I'm the new Yellow Brick Road, babies. Try and bring me down. I was born with a cynic's pride and a heart in a freeze. I thought my musical chances died, but now I sing out Louise. Enemies and flying monkeys that try and bring me down. You brought my babies, I dare you. Try and bring me down. Ba 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 da, ba 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 da, da 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 da. I got a paw to redeem myself with Kimberly and Jay Schmidt. Now everyone want an autograph or want to kick me down the orchestra pit. Enemies and flying monkeys that try and bring me down. You Broadway babies, I dare you. Try and bring me down. On June 10th, 2003, a Broadway musical premiered starring the Wicked Witch of the West. She defied gravity and no one in all of Oz could bring her down. It received terrible reviews, and the Yellow Brick Road was the most mocked symbol of that show. Reviled, ridiculed, savaged in the times. We thought that show would close immediately, but now that it's gone, we don't know who we are anymore. Listeners, Alex is like that road, standing before you in the divide between East and West. Success and failure, hater and fangirl. And you can try and bring him down. But before you do, you must remember one thing. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Listeners. There ain't much of a difference between a hater and fan. Without me right in the middle, babies, you would have nothing to stand. From east of Oz to the Emerald City, hello New York, what up Missouri? What? You wanna try and bring me down? Ba-na-na-na, da-na-na-na. Come on and bring me down. Ba, ba, oh, wow.
What a way to come back into our lives.
Yeah.
I put on some makeup, turn on the tape deck, and put the wig back on my head. Suddenly I'm Miss Midwest, midnight checkout queen, until I head home and I put myself to bed.